This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Postcards on the Line. I'm your host, Chris Littlefield. Bear with me this week. I'm still getting over being sick, so I still might sound a little congested. With me is Kevin Scarf. Kevin, hello. Thank you for coming on Postcards.
Hi, Chris. It's good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, of course. And you recently corrected me in my DMs that I've been mispronouncing your name. I've been saying Kevin Scharf, and that is incorrect.
Yeah, you know, that's been my whole life. People say it that way. But my pat response is, well, you don't send your kids to elementary shul, so...
Well, you know, there is a such thing as shul.
Well, I guess not here.
Yeah, I'm not Jewish, but I know that shul is a thing.
Yeah.
So tell me real quick, because we don't really know each other very well, although I have read your comments a couple times. How long have you been in the Babel Conference, and what is your Star Trek origin story?
So I found Trek FM and the Babel Conference back in 2016 when they were doing the 50th anniversary celebration and the almost daily podcast where they were going over the entire Trek canon. That's when I discovered Trek FM and joined the Babel Conference then. I've always been a sci-fi fan. When I was really young, Star Trek really wasn't on my radar until I have this vivid memory of flying home. I was on a school trip to the west coast of Canada, and we were flying home, and Star Trek IV was the movie on the airplane. And that was the thing that hooked me, I think. And right after that, Star Trek The Next Generation started. And like they say, the rest is history. I've been a Trek fan ever since.
Wow, that's great. I got to say, Star Trek IV is one of my fondest original series films that I remember from childhood. It's probably my favorite.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're going to start, that's probably one of the best places to start with all of Trek, I think.
Oh, it's such a good one.
Yeah.
Well, today we're discussing the fan response to The End is the Beginning, the third episode of Picard. If you would like to participate and share your response, please post your comments in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Type B-A-B-E-L into the search field and it will come right up. We'll create a special postcards discussion thread right before each new Star Trek episode. Leave your comments and they just might get read on the air. As of this recording, we have 328 comments on the postcards thread, which is a 10% decrease from our last episode. And it's a decrease, but I gotta say that the conversation in this thread was really, really fascinating.
Yeah. There was a lot to talk about on this episode.
There sure was a lot to talk about. And I thank you, listeners, for taking my note from last week and keeping things really respectful. There were a lot of long threads in which people disagreed, but it was really nice and people really respected each other. So thank you so much for doing that. That's what I love about the Babel Conference. Listeners, keep those comments coming because we love your feedback and we love talking about your feedback, which is exactly what we're going to do right now. But Kevin, first tell me what you thought of the episode.
I really liked this episode. I mean, this almost felt like the real beginning of the show. This is the getting the band together. Up to this point, we'd sort of had backstory and setup, and this was the beginning of the mission, right? This was where our journey's really going to start. So I'm really excited to find out where that's going to take us and more about these new characters.
Yeah, it's kind of like they pulled all of these things together and now we know, now we're going to see what's going to happen.
Exactly.
And what an interesting group of people.
They are. They are. Like I said in the Babel conference, they're the most damaged starship crew we've ever seen in Star Trek. Everyone either has a chip on their shoulder or some kind of mental block or someone is pulling their strings. And that's something we've never seen on Star Trek before. And it really excites me that's where this show is starting and that's where it's taking off from. So.
Yeah, certainly not to this degree. Sisko had a lot of baggage that he brought in, regarding Picard. But this is definitely, I think, the most complex and, as you said, damaged. And I really like it.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't know much about Rios yet, but, uh-huh. that guy's been through some stuff and, he's dealing with it in a very interesting way and a way that, he's narcissistic. He's got all his EMHs and all his holograms looking like himself, which is a little bit, makes you think wondering what's going on with him.
Uh-huh.
But he's really hurt, right? Like he's dealing with some stuff. So.
I think this is the first main character that we've gotten shirtless when we first see them?
probably.
And I'm not complaining about that. He's not bad to look at all.
There was the gel down scene in the first episode of Enterprise, but
Yeah. That wasn't the first time we saw the character.
No.
Right?
But yeah.
All right. Well, Kevin, go ahead and get us started.
All right, so our first comment is a first-time commenter.
Nice.
Thanks. Well, when you're here now, you've got to do that.
Did you practice that before?
I recorded it and I listened to it. I'm like, how am I going to do this? I got to make it sound at least half as good as Chris.
Oh, come on. So, well, thanks for doing that.
Oh, my pleasure. So Greg Packin says, one of the things that really resonates with me is this new depiction of Picard. He's not perfect. He has flaws like the rest of us. I can't ever remember watching TNG and feeling uncomfortable on his behalf like I did during some of the scenes in this episode. Well, maybe when he was duped into publicly displaying a Horgon on Ryza, but that's a whole different kind of situation.
Yeah, Greg, I like that it makes you a little bit uncomfortable watching Picard for this series.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, in earlier shows, everybody was perfect. Even Picard, who'd been assimilated and tortured and, put through the ringer on any number of occasions, always came out fine. And I think that's part of the nature of 80s television, right? That every episode was a reset. Mm-hmm. And this show is really dealing with the repercussions, not just of what happened 14 years ago, but I think what happened to Picard over the course of his entire career from back in the Stargazer days. Like I said, Picard's always been seen to be strong and steady and always in full control of his faculties. And, he's been through so much stuff that it's got to take a toll on a person.
Oh, yeah. On Twitter, at Beta Artemis says, I want a Laris and Jaban show about what they are doing on Earth with Number One while Picard is gone. And the creator of Trek FM, Christopher Brian Jones, says this has to at least be a short Trek. I agree.
Oh, they are such great characters. And
aren't they?
If this is the last we see of them, it's a total shame.
It's not. It can't be.
No. I'm hoping we come back to them. Have you read the Picard comic?
I have.
Yeah, and Laris and Jaban are great characters in that, too.
And Raffi, too.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So just knowing that little bit about them, I don't want to give away too much to people who may not have read that, but I hope that backstory ends up in the show as well.
Yeah, me too. I think I've done a few spoilers from the Countdown comic on this show.
Right.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, it happens.
But read it. It's great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So, at Rob Vaughn 18 says, like fine wine, Patrick Stewart gets better with age. Loving the fusion of old and new music and looking forward to seeing where the next twist is.
Thanks for your comment, Rob.
Yeah.
Yeah, the music is just killing it for me.
Yeah, I rewatched episode 3 this morning and the music was really hitting me this time.
Yeah.
The subtle nods to Next Generation music, sometimes even subtle nods to original series music.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think the composer is doing a fantastic job portraying the emotion of the piece through the music.
Yeah, Jeff Russo is killing it. Just
he
killing
is.
it. All right. Justin Ozer from the line Main Show and Earl Grey said, I was ready to riot if Laris died. Justin, I would have too. And then Andrew Perrick says, the sudden and quite loud concern for Laris and Jaban, my wife and I had during that scene totally woke up our 2-year-old.
Yes. Yeah, I don't want to, you don't want to see anything bad happen to your favorite characters. And in 3 episodes, the two of them, especially Laris, have become fan favorites.
They're kind of teasing us a little bit with Jaban, though. Like, he almost bit it with the little, you know, the pill, the whatever it is that the
yeah,
agent,
the acid, the acid spit. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he's kind of been a little bit, we're less sure about him, I think.
Well, he's the one that's going to fly off the handle too, right? She's the one in charge. She keeps him in check. And so if anything, I think if anything happens to either of them, it's going to be Jaban first.
Yeah, but I hope that it doesn't. I like him too.
I love that they are Tal Shiar through and through, and Chateau Picard has Romulan disruptors hidden all over the place.
Everywhere. Yeah. That was so, I started laughing. They were just, oh, that was so great.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't be too prepared.
Yeah. Lest you think that the Romulans are just his companions.
Exactly.
They are not just the helpers on the property.
No, they are his protectors, his bodyguards, and his vintners.
Mm-hmm.
And dog keepers. So next, Brian Diggs says, I was not afraid for Laris. I was more sure she could survive that attack than I was that Picard could. But it was fun to see Picard take some action. Not quite so old that he had to let them do all of the dirty work. Also, nice to get some confirmation about regional Romulan racial diversity. Although Northerner seems a bit out of place and human-centric, I would have preferred it to be due to different planetary or solar differences, like the Klingons, rather than continental.
Yeah, thanks for your comment, Brian. I love that we're getting all the diverse Romulans and the regional stuff. I don't see why it's human-centric, though, and I'll point out that Patrick Carlin this morning in the thread posted a Doctor Who meme, which says, if you are an alien, how come you sound like you're from the north? And the doctor says, lots of planets have a north. So it could be, you know,
yeah,
northern from anywhere.
When you think about it, every planet has a north.
Yeah.
If a planet spins on its axis, it's got a north. So,
although I guess it is fair that we're not aware, Brian, of anybody else using that's not on Earth using the term northerner.
No.
As we have not encountered extraterrestrial life that we're aware of yet.
Yeah, but I do like that they are making an effort to make the Romulans more diverse.
Mm-hmm.
Too many times, Star Trek aliens are monocultures.
Right.
And being able to see that the Romulans are not, that there is a diversity in racial tendencies, accents, and look is good for... Not for Star Trek as a whole, I think.
Yeah. Brian always leads a lot of really interesting discussions in the threads that often relate a lot to cultural issues and, you know, mm-hmm. dynamics like that. It's great. Thanks, Brian. Janessa Quijada says, I wonder if the ugly bowl cuts the Romulans used to wear were their government's way of enforcing unity through a sort of monoculture, kind of like how North Korea only has 15 hairstyles its government lets people choose from. Also, there was something similar when the Manchus conquered China and established the Qing Dynasty. For 400 years, Han Chinese men were forced to shave the front of their heads and wear the back in a braid or face execution. Wow, Janessa, what an interesting thing. I had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't really know about that either.
I like that thought.
It does make a bit of sense, though. If the Romulan government has fallen, then the amount of control it has over its population has gone.
Mm-hmm.
And the Romulan people are free to change up their hairstyles a bit.
Oh, yeah. Totally makes sense.
So Elizabeth Moore wrote, did anyone here find it funny that they had a big long view of Vasquez Rocks and then it turned out to actually be Vasquez Rocks and not the planet with the Gorn or Vulcan or anything? I literally laughed out loud. And Elizabeth, so did I, especially when the title came up that it said specifically Vasquez Rocks right
yes.
on the screen. I laughed out loud. I thought that was very funny. And my friend who was watching with me, who's not as big a Trek fan as we are, have no idea why I thought that was funny.
Yeah, I laughed too. That's such a wink to everybody who knows that Vasquez Rocks has been used a ton in Star Trek.
Forever. Yeah, for everything. It is a little surprising that there still aren't any people around Vasquez Rocks. You would think that there would be people, but Rafi's got a nice setup out there.
Yeah.
Even if she does feel like she's down on her luck.
Uh-huh. Andrea Boot says, loved the idea of unity over division and being reactionary rather than rational in the face of disaster / terrorism. That was a theme at one point in this episode. It's been a tough week in the UK, the finalization of Brexit and a terrorist attack in my hometown of Streatham. Since then, I've seen so much love from my community for people of all faiths and backgrounds. Yeah, Andrea, I'm so sorry to hear about what happened in your hometown, but I know that we chatted a little bit on the thread and everybody's okay. Thankfully, I'm so glad. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yes, thank you. But she's right. In the face of disaster, people do come together. You hear stories about that all the time. The musical Come From Away is an example of that. Uh-huh. Those stories are always what you want to hear after something like this. Unfortunately, that seems to happen less and less these days, but one has to have hope.
Mm-hmm.
Rebecca Skipper says, it just occurred to me that Picard ignored Kirk's warning in Generations. I'm paraphrasing here. Don't let them take you out of that chair, because while you're there, you can truly make a difference. In my opinion, Picard's principles as a captain and a good man may not have lined up with the realities of being an admiral that has to look at the broader scope and not just one cause or one idea. Picard is very open-minded, but movies like Insurrection prove that institutions are not so idealistic.
Yeah, I like the callback to Generations with Kirk. I didn't think about that, but you're absolutely right, Rebecca.
Yeah, we never expected to see Picard as an admiral. I think he's a man who likes to be out exploring, and to be chained to a desk, it doesn't seem like him. But again, if you read the Countdown comic, he's an admiral with a ship. So
yeah, I expected him to be an admiral.
Well. Yeah, in some ways, but as someone who's read a lot of the Star Trek novels as well, he never became an admiral in those, and there was more exploration and lots of stuff happens there that we won't talk about because it has no bearing on what's going on this show.
Sure. And Paloma Bennett, our friend, says, I love this new episode. I am curious about how the ex-Romulan Borg drones seemed to recognize Soji. I wonder if that was because Data was temporarily part of the Borg. Maybe Hugh doesn't realize that Soji is not human because he has been disconnected from the Borg collective for a long time. So Paloma, you bring up a really good point. And when I read your comment, I questioned, what do you mean Data was temporarily part of the Borg? And then I remembered First Contact. It's maybe there's something connected there that we don't realize.
Yeah, I'm still not quite sure how the Borg fit into everything. There's so many plots have been set up with so many threads. It'll be interesting to see how they weave together, and how the Borgs and the Romulans and Soji and Dodge all fit together is going to be very, very compelling.
Yeah, they're all connected somehow. I think it's not totally clear yet.
No. And it's good to have mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Keller says, I think the argument about the motive behind Starfleet's refusal to continue the evacuation of Romulus is now settled. Admiral Clancy's lack of resources excuse was BS because Picard had presented a revised evacuation plan. This included using mothballed ships and reserve Starfleet personnel. As Picard said, Starfleet gave in to intolerance and fear.
Yeah.
That's interesting. But again, you know, sometimes Starfleet has to do what the members of the Federation want. And is it worth it losing half your membership in your organization if you do this? It's a tough line that everybody had to walk, and unfortunately, Picard came down on the wrong side of that line.
Yeah. Kristen Benowit is a first-time commenter. And I am really curious why Soji called Mom to see if Dodge was okay and not Dodge. And then Earl Grey's Amy Nelson said, when she called mom, did mom, quote, put a spell on her? I know that's not the right words, but Soji was knocked out even before the call ended. What's up with that? And then Rick Honey says, I don't think mom is a real person, but rather a face of a supercomputer to give an anchor to the twins' implanted childhood memories. Interesting. What do you think about mom, Kevin?
I have been interested in who mom is since episode one when Dodge called her. Obviously, mom knows a lot more about what's going on than she lets on to her so-called daughters. And for Soji to just collapse in the middle of that call, and mom didn't seem surprised at all when that happened. She just kept chatting and chatting. So I don't know who she is. I'm wondering if maybe she's a face for Maddox, or I don't know. I have no idea. And I keep saying this. I can't wait to find out. I think these writers know what's going on and what's happening. And it's another one of those plot threads that we can't wait to see picked up again.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Honey says, I'm amused by Raffi's drinking glass. My grandmother had that exact vase. And Brandon Shea Metalla from the Line main show says, I'm excited to see all the androids Bruce Maddox has created on his mining establishment of Free Cloud City.
Nice.
Yeah. Do you think Maddox has an army of synthetics anywhere?
I don't know. It's possible.
And what do you think Free Cloud City is? It looked like PokerStars.net when Raffi called it up on her pad.
I think it's a Las Vegas-y type of situation.
Yeah, it's interesting. This sort of leads again to the discussion about the economics of the Federation,
right, which we'll get to later in some other comments.
Yeah, so I think let's leave that live for now until another comment comes up.
Michael Merrick, not to be confused with Narek, says, in First Contact, Picard still, quote, heard the collective, even though his appliances had been removed years earlier. Either this was metaphorical or some sort of connection still remains for XBs. When Ramda was threatened, all the other XBs in the room were focused right on her as if ready to defend her. So there is still some sort of connection, purely psychological or otherwise. How much of Ramda is intuition and how much a more direct connection? I expect we will find out. Will Picard at some point address the XBs and or active drones as Locutus? They can be expected to recognize him. Yeah, I thought about Locutus this episode, too.
You know, it never dawned on me about Locutus, and it should have, because not much has been made of Picard's connection to the Borg yet on the show, and I never even thought of that. But you're right. The Borg will have a connection to Picard, for sure, especially if Hugh is there.
Yeah, thanks for your comment, Michael. I'm pretty sure Locutus is going to come up at some point, somehow.
I bet. That's another mark off the Picardingo card.
Right.
Yvette Blackman says, although I did not want to see the TNG crew back together on Picard, I was adamant about it. But I find that after watching episode 3, I was feeling quite put out that Jean-Luc is going to space with these new people. And Peter Setnicker says, Dr. Girardi is by far my favorite character in Trek next to Data and Spock. I love her innocence and passion for her work and the way she advocates for herself and has attached herself to Picard.
Thanks for your comments, Yvette and Peter. Yeah. Dr. Girardi's getting a lot of love, and I really like her, too. I'm surprised that she's your favorite character next to Data and Spock with such a short amount of screen time so far.
Right.
She must have really resonated with you.
My fear is that she's a Manchurian candidate type of character and that Commodore O has done something to put the thought into her head. You don't think so?
I don't think so. Well, we're going to talk. There's some other comments about that later, too. So let's talk about that.
I'm getting ahead. There's so much to talk about and everything brings up something else.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Sure.
Christopher Query says, regarding the false front door, in the South, many homeowners enter through the back door, partly because the driveway leads to the back and it's easier to carry in groceries that way. When the owner is at home, the back door would be unlocked, but not the front. Family and friends know to go to the back when visiting. However, a stranger, such as a salesman, would go to the front. The homeowner would be suspicious of anyone at the front door. Ha! That's interesting, Christopher. I'm from the South, too, but I didn't know about that.
Well, I am obviously not from the South, but Our house has a front door that we never use because the drive, like this comment says, the driveway goes right to not the back door in this case, but the side door. So it's always solicitors or salespeople who ring the front doorbell, and so you know whether it's a friend or foe when the doorbell rings.
Yeah, you know, actually, come to think of it, last weekend I stayed at an Airbnb in Connecticut, and the owners used the back door and not the front door. Huh.
The front door is for special company and trick-or-treating.
Right.
So Nicholas Paul Collinson says, something I'm really liking about this series so far is that it seems to be giving us a more critical look at who Picard is. He's still very much the hero and the man we remember, but just based on his conversations with Admiral Clancy and Raffi, he's clearly grown quite arrogant, and they both call him out on this. After his talks with Raffi, my partner turned to me and said, I don't think I like Picard. And based on this, I'm almost inclined to agree. He was being very presumptuous to expect her to help him, and I like that she called him on it. I think we're really getting a deep re-examination of the high and mighty utopian ideals of TNG, and I think that's a really good, healthy thing. We should always re-examine and be critical of the things we think are good to make sure they still hold up as our understanding of the world grows and changes. I'm expecting there will be a lot of deep personal revelations coming up for Jean-Luc. Yeah, thanks for your comments, Nicholas. I agree. Like, Picard is not the hero that we saw him as 20 years ago. So, like I said earlier, he's a man who's been through some things, and he's grumpy, and he's got every right to be grumpy.
Yeah, I didn't put this in the questions and concerns comments because Nick has talked about this for a while, about reexamining the idea of utopia and how that's a healthy thing. I really like that.
Yeah, that's true. You've got to always be striving for a utopia, right? Like, if you're living in a utopia, you could get complacent, and that may seem to be what's happened to the Federation at this point.
Yeah. And maybe the best name, well, one of the top two names in the thread is Ricardo Redshirt. Ricardo says, great episode again. I don't know what to think about the holograms looking the same as the captain. That's weird. And Rick Honey says, the holos looking like him and the fact that he didn't allow the dermal regenerator to heal him, allowing for a cool scar, tells me this guy's ego is bigger than his ship. You think his ego's big, Kevin?
Well, he obviously has a large sense of himself, but I don't know if it's ego so much as damage. We learned that he has been haunted by the death of his last captain, and I think I'm wondering if it's more a sense of isolation. Like, he feels the only people he can count on are himself, so he's made other versions of himself to be his crew.
Ah, that's
he doesn't
cool.
want to have. He doesn't want to have to rely on a crew or a captain. So I'm wondering. That's my niggling theory about Rios at this point, that he's trying to be overly self-reliant, and I think we'll see him come out of his shell as the show goes on.
Yeah.
Benjamin Matherly. Wow. I just finished the episode and loved it. When the TNG theme came in at the end, it brought tears of excitement to my eyes. Also love the EMH and Captain Rios. He's handsome in a roguish way. Loved it. And Michael Nielsen wrote, I'd like to see a spinoff with Javan and Laris. And does anyone else think of Rizzo the Rat from the Muppets whenever Lieutenant Rizzo comes on?
I hadn't thought about that.
Well, I didn't before that.
Now I do. Yeah. I was thinking Grease before.
Oh, yeah. There's a, yeah, that sort of makes sense too. Yeah. She's an interesting character.
Yeah.
Rizzo.
There are theories floating out there that she's actually the brother that Narek lost, or that disappeared a year ago or something like that.
Oh, she did call Narek her brother, right?
Yeah, they're brother and sister, or brother and right. They're siblings.
They are siblings. Interesting. Yeah. So when she was altered to look like a human, perhaps she was altered...
her gender, too.
In other ways. Yeah, yeah. It's possible.
Thanks, Benjamin and Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Query says, sure, she looked cool, but why would a Vulcan need to wear sunglasses? And in response, the other coolest name in the thread, Brando Calrissian, says, just because she's a spy doesn't mean she doesn't have style. Benjamin Miner replies, I don't need sunglasses, but wear them to look super fly. I like the idea of a Vulcan with a sense of style. And Bill Sweet says one word, weed. So I don't think Commodore O is high as hell, but
no, I don't think she is either.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah. Have we ever seen anyone wear sunglasses in Star Trek before?
I don't know. I don't know.
Especially sunglasses that looked straight out of Top Gun. I mean, but maybe this is another hint that she's not a Vulcan.
Right. Yeah. My money's on that she's not a Vulcan. I've said that before on the show.
You would think that Starfleet would have enough security, though, that someone who's not a Vulcan wouldn't make it to the rank of Commodore. But again, story threads that we'll pick up later, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy Chang commented, therapeutic utility of a shared mythical framework. Star Trek lately, especially in DS9 and Disco, has made subtle and not so subtle commentary on faith and religion. Wondering if this is where they're going with this, or it could just be the cover story to get to XB Romulan cat lady. I think an examination of faith has been a part of Star Trek since the 1960s. I don't think this is anything new.
Sure.
For the franchise. So, I mean, it's not always called out so blatantly, but this is something Star Trek has done since the Roman Empire episode of the original series, you know?
Yeah, I really like the quote, therapeutic utility of a shared mythical framework.
That is a very clinical view of what religion is.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I thought that was really, really interesting to point out. And also the fact that Jeremy refers to Ramda as a cat, Romulan cat lady, ex-Borg Romulan cat lady.
Well, that's almost true. I really did love the cards she was playing with.
Yeah.
The style of them, the sort of tarot feel. Was yeah. she trying to read the future? You know, I think there may be a new Star Trek card game available soon.
Oh,
with
yeah.
triangular shaped cards.
She really fascinates me. I'm excited yeah. to learn more about her.
Did she give off a Savick vibe to you too? Was it just her hair?
That she's yes, sort of, and that is also mentioned by in the thread. Yeah,
I did read the thread, Chris. I'm not trying to jump okay. ahead.
It's okay. I think a lot of people were kind of thinking a lot of the same things this episode, so it makes sense. Definitely gave off a Savick vibe. Janessa Quijada says, it remains to be seen how it all plays out, but the Picard show is reminding me of why I'm also obsessed with The Expanse. Everyone is damaged, angry, bitter, and keeping secrets. It's definitely intriguing to me. And J.J. Becker says, everyone here is so beautifully flawed. I love it. And Brando Calrissian again says, I agree. The characters mirror what's happened to Starfleet.
Mm.
Again, talking about these damaged people coming together.
Exactly.
I like that. And I like, Brando, that you said that the characters mirror what's happened to Starfleet.
Yeah, I never thought about it that way, but he's right. I don't think anyone can reach all the ideals that Starfleet put forth. And so what does that do to a person's psyche if they're not achieving what they feel they're expected to?
Huh.
And that's...
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure, right?
Exactly. And... we've never seen an examination of that before, so. Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
Jason Myers, about an hour after watching the episode, I was hit with surprising feelings of sadness. Raffi is so angry and has been stagnant for 14 years, as has Picard in some ways. I'm surprised he never even checked in with her to see how she was doing. They are both broken in some ways, and I like the prospect of watching them both regain some of what they have lost, especially together. Yeah, Jason, Raffi is a really interesting character, isn't she? She holds so resentment so close to be living with that for 14 years and to never... Where are the ship's counselors in this part of the 24th century? We right. need a Troy to talk to these people.
We do. Did you watch The Ready Room, Kevin?
Not for episode 3. I'm behind on that.
I just watched it before we started recording. It's so good. Michelle Hurd is the interview... this time, and she Oh my gosh, you got to watch it, listeners, if you haven't seen it.
I will do that as soon as we're done here.
She talks a lot more about the history, about Raffi's personal history, and it's very eye-opening as to why some of Raffi's character traits are the way that they are. And she talks a lot about struggles with addiction. And I just really, I don't know, I really liked that conversation.
Yeah, I can't wait to learn more about her. Yeah. Why does she want to go to Free Cloud? What's there for her?
Right.
There has to be a reason that she jumped on with a guy that she's been resenting for 14 years.
Uh-huh.
And I also get the feeling that she wouldn't have called for the ship if there wasn't something in it for her as well.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't think she's going anywhere, though. I think she's going to stick around.
Oh, she'll be in for the long haul.
Yeah.
Because on top of her damage, she's also moral.
She's still Starfleet.
Exactly. And she was betrayed by Starfleet, it seems like.
Well, all of them, apparently, it seems like.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have confirmation about Rios, but Picard is pretty sure that he's Starfleet, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the way Picard called out Rios on that.
Yeah. Nick Corsello says, "Hi guys, longtime listener, first time commenter. I love this third episode. Really brought the previous episodes into a more clear context, and it was such a thrill to see Sir Patrick Stewart so perfectly become the strong, vital captain we remember in the flashback scenes. I can't wait to see where this series takes us." Me too, Nick, and thank you for commenting. Welcome to postcards.
Thanks, Nick. You're right, and I loved Picard's hesitation about sitting in the captain's chair. I thought that was a fun little bit of business when Rios offered him a seat, and he's like, "Nope, not going to sit there. That's not my place." But to the way the episode ended with Picard makes you excited that he's becoming the man he used to be again. So,
mm-hmm. I like the journey. I think that it's important to see that.
Right. And we have 7 more episodes to find out where the journey goes,
We're almost halfway done. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, don't think about it. Don't think about it. Yeah. Fine. Christopher Mock said, "I get a bad feeling about Jurati just from the fact that Commodore O felt the need to make a surprise in-person visit. She's either working for O or a synth herself following orders."
Okay, here we go, Kevin. Now we can talk about this.
Yeah, now we can. I don't think she's a synth. I don't think she's... I don't know. I don't know what she is, but I think something happened that we didn't see. Because the Commodore wouldn't have made the trek all the way out to Okinawa, to the Daystrom Institute, just for a chat. I feel like there may have been some mind melding happening or some kind of blackmail. I don't know, but I think something more is going on here.
Okay, I do agree that O wouldn't have just gone all the way out to, well, not that it takes that much effort to get to Okinawa from San Francisco, but I think that there is definitely more to the story. But I think Jurati's just Jurati. I mean, she may be monitoring her somehow, monitoring through Jurati. I don't know. But the idea of a mind meld to me doesn't make sense, because I think that O is Romulan. And in that case, Romulans don't have those abilities anymore. True. The Remans do, but the Romulans don't, like the Vulcans.
Yep.
So, and also the attack with the invaders happened right before Jurati showed up, which I am assuming Commodore O had something to do with.
Well, it seemed very convenient that Jurati showed up.
That's true.
Like, you know, she's not a Starfleet trained hand-to-hand combatant or firearms specialist, and yet she showed up just when that fight was over and didn't run. She walked in, picked up a Romulan disruptor, and shot somebody.
Yeah, she killed a Romulan.
Yeah. She seems distraught about it, but she did it. And if she really is just a scientist who wants to go along on this mission, I don't know if she would have done that.
Yeah. Well, maybe there is something there. I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Again, another plot thread that we'll find out soon, hopefully.
Yep. And that brings us to our questions and concerns. Go ahead, Kevin.
So Brando Calrissian says, I enjoyed the episode overall. The acting continues to be great, as are the set pieces. The plot and pacing are a bit scattered, though, such as with the cuts back to the Romulan Borg artifact with Soji. It felt like every time the show picked up, it was dragged down by those scenes. I think for me, I'm not just clicking with that part of the plot yet. However, I enjoy a good mystery, and I don't mind a slow burn, which this show definitely is.
That's a good point, Brando. I do think that the pacing was slower for this episode than the last two. And I think that it is purposeful that the Romulan Borg artifact plotline isn't something that we quite connect with.
It's the central mystery of the show, right? So you don't want all the answers in episode three. Mm-hmm. Not when we've got the whole rest of the season left. So I'm trying to draw parallels between what's happening there versus what's happening with Picard, but it's hard at this point without knowing all the facts.
Right. Suzanne Williamson says, where the heck was number one during the Romulan intruder scene? I would have expected him to at least be barking, even if he was somewhere else in the house. I just wanted to know he was okay. I thought about that too. The dog wasn't anywhere to be found with all these Romulan invaders. And I know that in the ready room, Hanalei Culpepper had mentioned that the pooch was a little difficult to work with. But, you know, Picard told Dodge that if she was a threat, number one would let him know. So where was he?
That's a very good question. Maybe the Romulans just threw him a nice juicy steak before they arrived.
Maybe the Romulans killed number one.
No.
I'm kidding.
You can't kill the dog and expect us to be on board.
I'm a dog owner. I'm just joking. And Suzanne was talking further in the thread about how she's like concerned with animals and totally teasing. Yeah, Number one is fine.
The dog is fine.
He was in a different place in the house, sleeping.
He was patrolling the vineyards.
Right.
Duncan Barrett asks, am I the only one who massively prefers the flashback uniforms to the 2399 ones? And Robert J. Geiger responds, the flashback uniforms are beautiful. The 2399 ones look like a child tried to cosplay the DS9 Voyager uniforms. I think I know what he's getting, though.
I don't understand.
Well, when we saw the 2399 uniforms in the earlier episodes, the collars did seem to be a little bit chunky. It seemed like... You know, it wasn't a nice, tight-fitted, around-the-neck collar like on Next Generation, and people seemed to have a lot of space. Like, all of the uniforms were slightly too big for everybody. I did notice that in the first couple of episodes. I guess it was episode two when Picard checked in at Starfleet headquarters. Uh-huh. So, yeah, there is something a little wonky about the style of those collars, I felt, but the flashback uniforms are gorgeous with the black in the middle of the shoulder lapels.
Yeah.
And the cut of the jackets I thought was nice. So
Picard's is really cool.
Yeah, with the gold,
with the extra layer,
because so many times Admiral uniforms just look like they went to the scrap bin of their fabric box and sewed something together like a patchwork quilt, and this look tailored and in line with the aesthetic of the rest of the fleet. But you got to wonder how often Starfleet changes their uniforms. They go through a lot of styles.
Right. I love all the variations of the uniforms, and I almost kind of prefer the 2399 ones to the flashback ones, I gotta say. Even though the flashback ones are really cool and I'd love to see them more, I just like that texture that's in the colored section. I mentioned it on the last show, I think.
Yeah, they are nice. But nobody's wearing a scant in the 2399.
Oh, man, not yet.
But with the cut of the jackets in the flashback uniforms, I don't know if you noticed, Raffi's sort of flared at the waist.
Yeah.
It just needs to be a little bit longer, and you got yourself a scant.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Matthew Pittard says, okay, feel free to crucify me after you have read this post. I probably deserve it. Well, no, I don't think we're going to do that, Matthew, but I'd love to hear your issues. So here we go. No, Captain/Admiral Picard is not a great person. He is demanding of others while continuing to be distant. as instanced by the fact that he cut his former XO adrift for 14 years after the incident. I think being a captain probably does strange things to people's interpersonal skills, but even on TNG, I didn't find him a particularly warm character, especially around children. When he came to see Raffi at the end of the last episode, I was expecting him to have a great speech ready to go. All we got was, "I need a pilot and a ship." That was it. She had to explain to him that's not how things work, to the point where she actually said, "I wasn't doing well." Let's be honest, if Picard didn't think that Raffi could supply both the ship and the pilot, then it might have been another 14 years before he contacted her again. It's all about what Picard needed to do. Hubris and arrogance again. I must admit, I'm enjoying the non-Picard scenes a bit more at the moment because this version of Picard is rubbing me up the wrong way at the moment. Well, a lot of criticism of Picard there, Matthew, and actually a little bit throughout the thread.
Well, we've been saying all along that Picard is damaged, and he's been carrying resentment for 14 years. And maybe seeing Raffi brings up stuff that he didn't want to bring up again, right? So he has locked himself away in his oak beam chateau, away from the rest of the universe, since the Mars incident. He is not in the same place he was when he was captain of the Enterprise.
Right.
And I like that we're seeing a different side of a character that we've known so well for 30 years.
I do, too. I like that the hubris is there. Admiral Clancy is right, I think, in many ways. And not contacting Raffi for so long, it's like, sure, he was dealing with his own demons too. I like that we're getting the imperfections in Picard, and he's got his personality and character flaws too.
Yeah, and can you name a single starship captain on Star Trek who doesn't have hubris? I mean,
sure.
In the first episode of Next Generation, Picard told off Q, right? Like an omnipotent being.
Right.
Kirk had his share of those. Janeway talked down the Borg, right?
Yeah.
So I think you need a certain level of hubris and arrogance to be a starship captain.
Mm-hmm.
And adjusting to life where people aren't jumping at your every order has got to be hard. And Picard has always expected people to do what he says. And so that's why he marches into Starfleet and says, "Please give me a starship. I need one right now."
Right.
And he's not used to people saying no to him.
Yeah, what a great comment, Matthew.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, we are not going to crucify you.
Nah.
Karen Chupless says, "Overall, this was my least favorite episode so far. Much clunkier in editing and flow. I wonder how it will binge together with the first two. Although I still enjoyed it, I had to stretch my disbelief further than I like. Mostly, it just seems a tad choppy to me."
Thanks, Karen. And Tim Han says, "When did smoking become a thing again? Surely mankind has moved on from such vices long into the future. The reason Gene Roddenberry didn't include it was smoking didn't survive into the 23rd century. We even had that Voyager episode on an alien planet when Tom Paris tells the alien woman they stopped doing that kind of thing long ago after learning what it did to our bodies." Interesting, yeah. I don't know.
I think, again, we're talking about damaged people here,
right?
And damaged people make bad mistakes, and stupid make stupid mistakes.
And people struggle with addictions.
Exactly. And so Raffi and Rios are people who have turned to a vice to help them cope.
Yeah, I like that. In the Ready Room, when Michelle Hurd was talking about people in our families that struggle with addiction, or those of us who struggle with addictions, the person that doesn't get invited to Thanksgiving because they're going to cause trouble or something like that. Those are part of the infinite diversity and infinite combination too. You know, we all belong in there. And,
exactly.
I like seeing someone that is getting bested a little bit by their demons. I certainly relate to that, in some aspects of my life, you know? And it just, I don't know, there's something really nice about shining a light on the imperfections and the issues that we deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder if by the end of the series, we won't see them using their vices anymore, that they'll have matured and moved on. Brian Meloche says, "This was my least favorite episode of the three. It brought in some confusing issues with Federation economics in this episode that I'm left to think about. I thought that the events that were discussed in the cold open would have taken place over weeks or even months. For example, you wouldn't ban synths and destroy them right away. You would ground them or put them in storage and investigate the cause first. I also imagine the question of continuing Federation support of a Romulan evacuation would be something that would be debated over days and weeks to put a vote in within the Federation Council. It doesn't ring true that Picard would come out of a meeting with the other admirals and politicians and lead to this. It's too compressed. Picard's actions in 2385 and his neglect of Raffi after makes me wonder if he was already suffering from Iremotic syndrome at a very early stage that early. He is not the captain I remember with my rose-colored Picard glasses. This is bringing out characteristics of Picard that were always there, but I didn't want to admit to myself were there. It's a more realistic Picard. It's still a good episode, but not as good as the first two."
Thanks for that comment, Brian. This is maybe the most critical I've ever heard you speak of Picard, or, you know, so I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, it's this brings up the question of economics again, and does Rios expect to get paid? What would he be paid in?
Right.
Why is Raffi living in a trailer out in the desert? You know, when there are replicators that can make anything for you, why would someone choose to live? Not that her trailer didn't look nice. I thought I could live in that trailer. That seems perfectly fine to me.
Oh, yeah. Out in the middle of nowhere with nobody around. I was like, ideal situation.
Exactly.
Well, Zorik Adamoff replied and said, "I think it's a stretch to say that the Federation has no money. Picard was saying that about Earth. And if it is just Earth, then people would definitely need some kind of a currency to do business outside of Earth." So that currency conversation is being brought up a lot right now.
Yeah. And I just don't want to get too hung up on it. I think the money thing comes up when it needs to come up, and I just don't think too hard about it. And I know some people do, and some people's Star Trek is about putting all the pieces together, making sure all the pieces fit, and sometimes things just don't, and that's fine. This is a story that requires these things, and I'll be happy to follow it.
Yeah, I like that we're getting some type of conversation about it, though. Mm-hmm. And I think that, yes, in previous treks, we've talked about how there's no currency anymore. But, you know, there's a lot of things that have been said in Trek that we don't specifically keep to biblical canon anymore in Star Trek. The franchise evolves and as our society changes, I think the thing that's important to me that Brandi Jacola brought up is from the Edge main show, mm-hmm. is to her, continuity is more important than canon. She said she stressed continuity over canon. And I kind of like that perspective. I like that approach because then it leaves a little bit of room to learn new things.
Yeah.
And to explore new ideas and to question things that we thought we knew.
Right. Yeah. Again, I'm not going to get too hung up on it. I don't think, while it's an interesting question, I don't think it's the question that this show's trying to answer or grapple with. So I'll just let it be and it'll wash over me. And if it makes me mad, so be it.
Thanks for bringing those points up, guys. And listeners, we are now going to move on to your last words. Alexander Boom says, "I really like that we see Picard in this way now. It feels like a natural consequence. Throughout TNG, he so often had to struggle both against less idealistic elements within Starfleet and a galaxy often challenging the Federation's ideas. For the longest time, he always managed to come out on top and reconcile these things. But even back then, you got to wonder if that would last forever. Ultimately, it didn't. And to me, that makes his accomplishment of upholding these ideals for so long even more worthwhile." That's a beautiful comment, Alexander. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of sums up all of the Picard issues that we have going on right now.
It does. And you have to wonder, though, too, if did he really manage them, or did he just bottle them up and they're coming out now?
Right.
Right. He's a man who's done a lot of things, and it's got to have consequences on who you are and your mental state.
Right. Yeah.
Chris Chaplin says, "The scene near the end, as Picard looks up into the stars, is a favorite of mine. It's a lovely yet painful connection to the final scene in Family, in which Rene stares up into the stars dreaming of adventures. And here, Picard anticipates what could be his final adventure in the stars."
That's such a great connection, Chris.
Yeah.
Oh, that gives me goosebumps.
And I think one thing we don't talk about very often in regards to this show, maybe, is this. We rarely see aging in our media, in our, what's the word I'm looking for, in our genre media, right? Mm-hmm. There are very few examples of big budget movies where your character is as old as Picard is supposed to be.
Right.
And this is also the story of a man reflecting on his life, a man reflecting on his accomplishments. And, you know, it's got to be not just exciting, but maybe a little melancholic for Picard to say engage on the bridge, because it could be the last time he does it, you know? So it's also a man who's grappling with his own mortality.
Right. And we, as the audience that loves him, are as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know we're hoping this show runs at least 3 seasons, but I'm wondering, you know, if down the line we're going to end with the end of Picard.
Right. That was also mentioned, I believe, on the Line main show. I think Brandon said that.
And, you know, it almost parallels his character in Logan and Professor X, the end of that character, right?
Right.
You know, last mission kind of a feel.
Okay, listeners, this next comment is a little bit lengthy, but it was so well written that I had to include the entire thing, because I think it's a fascinating, J.J. Becker writes this. He asks, "Is this Plato's heebie-jeebies or just existential blues? Down the rabbit hole? More like off to see the wizard. The Tragic Sense of Life by Miguel de Unamuno is a book that begins with an answer. I am a man. No other man do I deem a stranger. The question being something like, who am I? Seems to be on the minds of many of our characters as well. Quote, I want to be myself, and yet without ceasing to be myself, to be others as well. To merge myself into the totality of things visible and invisible, wrote Unamuno. It seems our man Rios has taken this quite literally. He must not be a yes fan, as he's gone and surrounded himself with himself. Understandable, I suppose, after seeing your captain's brains blown all over the floor. Perhaps Picard can help him rediscover his courage. Raffi, on the other hand, has apparently lost herself in herself, clearly a shell of the woman we saw in the opening sequence. Life has left her feeling empty, trying to fill the void with booze and snake leaf. Maybe Picard can help her find her heart. Jurati, of course, has her purpose. She has known all too well for years what she wants to do, but been held back by the powers that be. She's been forced to work in theory and conjecture, never being able to practically apply her knowledge and build the intelligence she envisions. Take a straight and stronger course to the corner of your life. Make the White Queen run so fast she hasn't got time to make you a wife. I would really like to hear Metatrex take a crack at this episode. I simply adored it. I was really liking Picard before now, but I am totally in love with Raffi. I mean the show. Star Trek Picard." JJ, that was a great comment.
Mm-hmm.
I love the allusion to the Wizard of Oz, and now that they're off to see the wizard, Rios looking for his courage, Raffi finding her heart, Jurati finding the brain, you know, the intelligence or the brain. It's so great. And Picard perhaps finding his home.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
It's, I'm just getting goosebumps thinking
about
it.
Yeah, me too, again.
Yeah, it's so philosophical, and yet it's exciting. There's never been a Star Trek like this, and I love that we're still able to get new concepts and ideas in this franchise that's been around for so long.
Yeah. Well done, JJ. Well done.
Yes, thanks, JJ. That's fantastic. Next, Robert J. Geiger says that ending was sheer perfection. The combination of Engage and the TNG theme brought the biggest smile to my face. I cannot wait to see where this show brings us next. And Matt Saltzman responds, Jean-Luc saying Engage, that's all I needed.
Yeah.
I think that's the hope that the Jean-Luc that we have known and loved since The Next Generation is coming back.
Yeah.
And this sort of shell of a man we've had in the first three episodes, he may be able to get out of that. And I think Engage means hope at this point.
I like that. Kevin, what do you think of the fans' response to this episode?
Well, I think generally positive. There are some people who are concerned about pacing and timing and sort of the general character of Picard. But I think everyone's excited to see where the show is going. And it's one thing that I love about modern Trek is that we don't have to tie things up in a nice bow at the end of a 47-minute episode and to be continued, right?
Yeah, I agree. It keeps me wanting more in a different way than the episodic series used to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it leaves so many more questions. And it leads to such great conversation, such as in this thread and with the Babel Conference listeners. It was just, this was a really incredible thread to read this week. So thank you, commenters.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation that we all get to have together. It's really an honor to be able to be a part of that and to kind of pull all of those things together for everyone.
Yes, thank you for letting me be a part of that this week.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for being here, Kevin.
My pleasure.
Be sure to check out all of our Star Trek Picard coverage in the main feed for The Line and in the Trek FM master feed. You can catch full analysis on The Line main show with Chrissy, Justin, and Brandon. Our episode commentary show is Treks on the Line with Mike and Max.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on Star Trek Picard, and the best place to do that is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, where we'll collect your feedback for postcards. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM, or send us an email using the contact form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select The Line.
Kevin, this has been a blast. Thank you for coming on today.
Oh, my pleasure. I've had a great time. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, you're natural.
Well, I do what I can.
Yeah, it's great. We'll have to have you back again sometime.
Oh, I'd love that.
Let people know where they can find you online.
Well, I do want to just plug a couple little things.
Please do.
I have a podcast with some friends of mine. I am in Central Ontario in Simcoe County, and we have a podcast called True North Nerds, where we talk about all kinds of geeky stuff. And you can find us at True North Nerds on Instagram and Twitter. And I'm also got involved with a Star Trek fan audio drama that a friend of mine has created called Endless Vigilance, where I am playing the role of a space station commander. You can check that out at Endless Vigilance, wherever you find podcasts. And you can always find me in the Babel Conference too, commenting. And my name's just Kevin Scarf there on Facebook. So I'd be happy to chat with anybody.
Very cool. No wonder you're so good at reading the comments. You have a lot of experience on mic.
Yeah, I dabble.
Yeah. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CD Littlefield and, of course, lurking in the Babel Conference. If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows going and even become an associate producer, visit patreon.com/trekfm for all the details. Thanks to our associate producer, Norman C. Lau. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and The Line. Join us very soon for another episode of Postcards on the Line, right after the next episode of Star Trek Picard, Absolute Candor, airs. Hailing frequencies open. Jessica Quijada says, I wonder if the ugly bowl cuts the Romulan...
Hold on. You said her name wrong. You said Jessica.
Oh, I did? Oh, my God. All right, here we go. Jessica Quijada... Oh, my God. This is...
I dabble.